Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back, everybody, for another Motorsport Magazine podcast. And thank you, as ever, so much for joining us. It's great to have you with us. I know many of you are readers of Motorsport Magazine and many of you are just listeners to our podcast. But whatever, it's great to have you with us. And today we are at the Goodwood Revival meeting. We're doing two of our podcasts at the Revival this year. And this one, we have two real racers with us. Real races from Tin Tops. Can we call them Tin Tops? I think we can. Well, they're touring cars. Okay. Steve Soper and Andrew Jordan, both of whom are racing Lotus Cortinas at this year's Goodwood Revival. And on our panel, we have a new person today. Normally, Alan Hyde is recording our podcasts very quietly in the background, never says a word. But because Alan is the pit lane reporter for the British Touring Car Championship, he joins us today. He's on my right here.
Honoured to be with you.
Yes, I should think so too. And it's very lucky that he is here because he knows all about touring car racing, which is more than I do. Good. Okay, and we obviously have Ed Foster with us, who's our website editor. Good. Okay, welcome Steve. Welcome Andrew. Thank you very much for joining us at this wonderful race meeting. You're both in Lotus Cortinas, and both cars have been built up specially for the Goodwood Revival. Now, Andrew, I know a bit about yours because it features in a programme that's going to be on ITV4 in about a fortnight's time as part of three or four Goodwood programmes that are going out under different subjects. It looks absolutely fantastic. How many hours have you spent on getting this car ready for Goodwood?
That's a good question. I've probably lost count, to be honest. It's we started the car probably a couple of months ago. It was helped out that we've actually built a Lotus Cortina previous to this one, so that one took a little bit longer because with this we knew everything, where everything needed to go. We knew all the suppliers that we needed to go to. So it was... I actually think, though, realistically, with two guys full-time on the car, if you had everything there, you'd build one in a couple of weeks, even to the sort of standards we've built it to. So ours probably took about 6 weeks because we were a little bit on and off with the build. But as you say, it looks fantastic. We're very proud of it. Just need to make it quick now. That's the harder bit. The easy bit's making it look lovely and pretty.
I've seen a cracking video of you driving it around Goodwood in the semi-wet.
Yeah, and that was my first experience of driving one in the wet. And I've driven our little A40 in the wet, and that's pretty slippy. You know, the tyres haven't got the most amount of grip in the dry. But I did a few laps around here, around Goodwood, and came in and said to my dad, who had driven one in the wet, I said, "That can't be right." And he was like, "What do you mean?" And I said, "There's no way that can be right." And so I said, "Well, I had an onboard camera, so I got that out and showed him." And he's like, "No, that's just how they are." And I was like, "Wow." Because it was just, I was having huge slide and huge moments going at such slow speed. It was great fun. It just felt like it was way over the top. But it was really good fun to drive and looking forward to having its first race here at the Revival.
Now, Mr. Soper, you're supposed to be a retired racing driver.
I am tired, definitely. And I'm old. I'm making the excuses already because mine's slow.
Yes, but you are very quick. This is the amazing thing. You may be retired, but
and old.
Well, that's your call.
He wasn't going to say that, but
we're going to have to spend the next 50 minutes together. So, we're, but no, listen. To, I mean, you've been there, you've done it all, man. I mean, you know, you've won everything. Why do you want to come back and do the revival in a Lotus Cortina?
I still enjoy racing. I think the Goodwood Revival is one of the best races, events, meetings there is in the world. I've sort of been to a lot of other places. If I haven't actually driven, I've been to Pebble Beach and seen what goes on over there. This, what Lord March does for this event, is absolutely fantastic. And although it is taken very, very serious, it is, they are old cars. They are, there's a bit of banter. There's a lot of good drivers turn up and you get sucked in to it. So I do five or six races a year, and this is my favourite. And if I wasn't invited to do the revival, I'd be very disappointed.
Well, you're here and you're racing, and this is great. And both of you think you're going to win. Well, actually, no, both of you hope you're going to win.
I hope, but I don't think I am, because I know all the times that the others have done. So unless we've found something in the garage in the last week, which I know we haven't, we're not going to be at the back, but I think Andy and the Matt Neal and Shedden, and there's a few big American cars, I think they're going to be up there. But if we can get in the top six or seven, I'm probably satisfied with that. I wouldn't have been satisfied at the beginning of the year thinking I was going to be in the top six or seven, but I probably will be now.
Isn't it true though, guys? I mean, the driver makes the difference, doesn't he, Andrew?
Well, so the engineers say, but the drivers and so the engineers make the difference. So it's I think, as Steve said, there's so many good people doing this in good cars. I think Matt Neal and Gordon Shedden are probably going to be the ones to beat. There's you know, Tom Christensen in a big V8, he's going to be very quick. But on the pairings, I think we were here testing our car, and Matt and Gordon were here, and they were a bit quicker than us, more than we'd hoped for. So it's funny, when we came here last year with our little A40, we were completely on top of it. We'd done a load of testing and expected to be right up the front. This one's been a little bit last minute getting it all finished. We're not quite where we wanted to be when we came testing, so I'm the guinea pig in a way, because I have the first qualifying session tomorrow. We've got a different spec of diff in there, different rear springs on there, so Dad's kind of said, yeah, it should be fine. Well, I'll tell you after the first couple of laps. And
thing is, look, he's making excuses already. I mean, this is like,
do you not know what professional racing drivers are like?
Yes,
you know?
I do. Yes, I
yeah, I'm about, I've got a, what, 40 minutes to make all of mine?
Andy, I mean, obviously, you know, talking about Matt and Gordon there, you're competing against them weekend in, weekend out. And is it a totally different thing competing against them on something like the Revival, when there's obviously pressure, you want to win, but it's not your job?
It's, you know, I think we're actually parked next to them in the shelter, so we're in pretty close company with them. And at touring cars, you desperately want to beat them. And even here, I obviously want to beat them, but it is, as Steve was saying, this is such a cool event. It's the best motorsport event I've ever competed in or been part of. And so, yes, anyone who's a competitive guy or girl will want to do as well as they can and win. But that being said, there's so much more to this event than that, and it's important to take it all in and enjoy it. You just enjoy it a bit more if you win. But I think it's real good fun racing against all these sort of guys. You know, you look down the entry list for our race, there's so many good people doing it. So it's a great experience to race against a lot of those people that you know I've had respect for over a long period. So to be on the grid with them, a really fun weekend with no pressure really compared to what we do as the day jobs, so to speak. I'm really looking forward to it.
And Andrew, so many current BTCC drivers at what is a fairly critical point in the championship year, isn't it? Is it? I mean, you guys have got to take care, haven't you?
Yeah, but we want to win, as I said. So it's actually a really nice way to switch off from the touring car season, because this is quite a full-on part of the season. There's a lot of races in a close period or short period of time. So to come here and switch off and have some good fun driving lovely race cars in a lovely atmosphere, we're lucky to be competing at such an event. So yes, we need to take care, but you know, we I competed in the St Mary's race last year, and it was cracking racing. I had a great race with the Manuel Pirro and an Alpha, and it was just enough room we gave each other. That was it, but it wasn't too much room. It was just enough, and racing someone of that class and having that respect both ways was something that I really enjoyed and was a special race.
Steve, we're also doing one of our podcasts with Tom Christensen here at Goodwood. In fact, I think it's going to be the next one after this. And he was talking about you, and that's one of the great things about being here, isn't it? You bump into all sorts of people that you've raced against or raced with. It's almost like a huge history book. Looking back on all those years, do you still get the same kick out of it?
Yeah, I think so. I'm, you know, I don't think we would do it if we weren't getting the kick out of it. I was motivated and quite excited to be driving down here. It's even, you know, wherever we finish, as Andrew said, we all want to win. But it's, you know, providing I'm not driving around at the back of the grid being lapped, I'll be quite happy that we're here. So I think, but the point you just made, there's lots of people I haven't seen for years and years and years, and then they turn up at this event, and you catch up with old friends and colleagues that you haven't seen for a long time. So no, it's a great event. I mean, I don't just think it's a good event, it's a great event.
Steve, you obviously had your neck operation. How many years ago now was it?
I damaged it in 2001, and I had it fixed in 2013.
Yeah. And the first car that you got back in after that operation, a Ford GT40? Here,
yeah,
at Goodwood.
Yeah, it probably was.
It was a good choice, I think. It was nice just to ease you back in.
Nice and gently.
Well, talk us through how that came about.
Well, a friend of mine owns the car, and he'd been saying for the last, he you know, whilst the car was being built, he kept saying, well, you're going to drive it with me. And I said, I can't, you know, I've got a neck. No, well, you'll be all right. You'll drive it. And he wouldn't give up. And it just so happened that my neck deteriorated, and I went back to see the surgeon and said, look, I'm losing all the feeling in my arm and everything. What's going on? And he sort of did a load more scans. He said, well, now you need surgery. 10, 11, 12 years before, he wouldn't operate. He said it was too dangerous. And then he said, okay, now you need surgery. So they fixed it, and after 3 months, I kept going back every month, and after 3 months, he said, no, fine, it's absolutely perfect. So I said, can I drive a race car? He said, yeah. I said, well, how strong is it? He says, it's now stronger than it was when you were 21. So hence the GT40.
Andrew, the thing about, I mean, the modern touring cars, it's quite high tech, actually, like all motor racing is these days. It's very sophisticated. You know, there's like tenths, thousandths of a second between you and all the other top guys. Here, it's in a very different environment, but you know, it's a quick track. It's a very quick track. There's not a lot of runoff. Tell us a bit about the lap here.
Yeah, it's, as you say, there's not a huge amount of runoff here, so it certainly gets your attention, and no matter what car you're in round here, you still feel like you're pressing on. Mm. Certainly down to No Name and St Mary's, I drove in 2012 a little Morris Minor here. And it wasn't the quickest thing in a straight line, but with the amount of runoff and stuff down there, you still feel like you've got a fair amount of speed on. So I really think you have to show the circuit a huge amount of respect, but it's very challenging to drive. It's, you know, it's just classic old school. It hasn't been chopped and changed due to health and safety and stuff, which is fantastic, because as drivers, that's what I'm sure, you know, 90% of us want is that thrill, that sense of speed, and Goodwood really gives you that. So and then you mix in that with some close racing with some other great drivers, and it's a great spectacle to be a part of, but also for the huge crowds this event gets to watch. If I wasn't competing, I'd come and watch this event 100% just to watch some classic racing.
Have you ever wondered what it'd be like with the British touring car around here? Do you think that'd be something you guys would be up for?
I've actually driven...
Rob's shaking his head furiously.
I've driven the Honda Civic I was driving last year around here. We did a ride event and did it here, and I did one run in the dry, and it felt very quick. And then it rained, and it probably felt even quicker because this place puddles quite a lot when it rains. And it was to the point I was like, look, I was thinking that's too wet. But when you've got a queue of guests waiting for their rides, you can't really say, no, I'm going to put my feet up and have a cup of tea till it's dried out a bit. So I kept going out, and I was pleased when I got to the end of that day all in one piece, because as I say, it puddles up quite a lot around here. So
I didn't know you'd done that.
Yeah, wow. No, it was... say it actually did feel pretty quick around here, I must admit.
So you're not always totally in control when you're giving passenger rides. I'm just thinking back to lots of passenger rides I've had and always felt totally safe with professional racing drivers.
Yeah, you just make it look like you're meant to do it and then come back and go, wow, that was close.
The problem with passenger rides that you start off all comfortable and safe, and by the end of the day you're getting so bored and fed up that you actually pick the speed up to keep yourself motivated and on it, if that makes sense. So you want to be at the beginning of the day, not at the end of the day.
Tell me, Steve, we could spend an hour talking about your career just itself. And when you come to an event like this, you know, you're quite a big name on the grid. I mean, I know you're retired, okay, but everyone's very aware of what you did. Do people kind of hustle you a bit because they're thinking, oh, it's, you know, it's Soper, we'll get him?
No, I don't, not at all at an event like this. I mean, actually, if you look at the grid, every single person on the grid is a name and has got a huge fantastic history. It's you know, there are other events that you'll turn up to do, and, you know, obviously if someone will be desperate to pass me or be in front of you, well, you know, if they're that desperate, they can have it, you know.
There you go, Andrew.
But here it was it's not like that. Okay. I don't think that's there's a problem with that at all.
What do you find the public ask most about your career? Because you did so many, there are so many different parts to it. Is there a sort of a particular era that you get asked about the most? Is there sort of super
probably
touring,
just one race meeting, isn't there?
Yeah, unfortunately, it goes back to 1992 with the John Glennand incident at Silverstone in the BTC. My career is a bit odd because I spent a long time out of the country by choice. Not because I couldn't drive in BTC, but I just enjoyed, you know, 10 years of my career was club racing before I turned professional. And when you've driven to every circuit and driven every circuit in England, and then you get a chance to, you know, drive it other places around the world, it was an easy choice. So they basically, most of the British fans remember me in BTC, and obviously the race that comes to the top is the John Glennand incident, where John lost his cool.
Yes, it was completely his fault, wasn't it? I gather.
As I could see it, yes.
I thought so. I just wanted to make sure that. Yeah.
Stay out of this, Andrew. Just stay out of it.
When you got pulled up in front of the stewards a while after, but you obviously went in there and you both agreed to say it was a racing incident, and it all went.
Yeah, I mean, after the accident, John was very upset. Obviously, he had. You know, he had a championship on it. I wasn't there to spoil his championship. I was not there under orders from BMW to do anything to him. I was there to help Tim Harvey win the championship, but not at the expense of pushing someone off. So that was never the plan. But obviously John didn't think that at the time. But as the tribunal, they wanted to make an example out of one of us, and the tribunal was 6 months later, and the night before the tribunal, the phone rang, and I was just about to eat, and it was this Scottish guy on the end of the phone, which I guess was John, and he said, look, he said, I've been told they want to get one of us, and he says, they're after you more than me, but if they can't get me, if they can't get you, they're going to get me. So he said, I think we better have a chat. So we actually had a chat before the tribunal and just went in and said, you know, we pointed no blame at each other, and once you can't point the blame at anybody, it was just put down as a racing accident. A very, very annoying to the RAC and certain other people around the championship who were all at the background pulling strings with knives and everything else for John and I.
It must be a bit frustrating for you, Steve, that so many people want to know about that one incident, if you bear in mind that you're a factory driver for so very, very long.
Well,
plenty of other things to talk about.
There is, but the problem is it made front page of Motoring News and Autosport. There was no Formula One on, there was no World Champion Rally on. So it was the only event on that weekend, and it made huge press. Yeah. And everybody still wants to talk. I mean, we did an interview 2 years ago here, Tim Harvey, John and I, for it went out on TV, and, it was a funny interview.
It was.
Andrew, let's bring things up to date for a minute, because I was, having looked at the first bits of the television programme that you're doing for ITV4, it occurred to me, I mean, you've started a business, a historic motorsport business, you and your dad. Why not with modern cars, bearing in mind your position in touring cars?
Because we've done modern cars for 25 years, and the time was right at the end of last year to sell the touring car team. And we're really into our old cars. It was something Dad was doing more really on the side of the touring cars for the last couple of years. And we built our lovely little A40, and that got a bit of interest, and there was some business there to be done. So it's more because we've got passion for old cars. We like building race cars, we like historic cars. So it made sense really. We don't want to grow it too much. We don't want it to get like the touring cars did, which was very big and very full on every day week. Yeah. We employ two people full time. I'm there a few days a week. Dad's there the whole time, and it's just nice to build and prepare some lovely cars, and it's quite good business wise as well. So it's something we really enjoy. It's very young really. It's only in its first proper year of doing that. We've done two Cortinas. We're doing some Capris, and I've got a little 1965 Mini Cooper that I will restore over the winter for a little Sunday car for myself. So I'm trying to push that in front of some of the customer cars, but it's not really happening at the minute.
Tell me, I'm always interested in when a historic car ceases to be a genuine historic car and becomes a kind of 1965/2015 racing car. The regulations are quite tight, aren't they? But let's face it, these cars are going a lot quicker now than they were when Jimmy Clark, for example, drove them.
Yeah, as you say, the regulations are very tight in most areas, but the kind of expertise and the resources that everyone's got in motorsport this sort of time, it enables you to do a bit more suspension wise, a bit more engine wise, because you've got better machines to machine different components and stuff. So obviously you're keeping it with all in the regs. It's just you've got a little bit, as you say, we're going quicker now than they would have been in the day, and that's just because everything's improved over the years. And there's certain things on the cars that we've learnt from touring cars that we then bring to that, because the same principles within most sorts of motorsport will apply whether it's a historic car or a modern car.
Have you, Steve, been doing things to the Cortina that he'd be interested in hearing about right now this afternoon?
I don't think so. I'm more interested in what he's been doing to his Cortina. I don't think he wants... I mean, I'd love to tell him how to go 2 seconds a lap slower. I've got all that information up my sleeve, but at the moment, their car is a bit quicker than ours. Quite a bit quicker. So, yeah, I'll share anything he wants, but he's got to give back.
I can see why you were a champion. Tell us all a bit about what we're really talking about here. So, we get hold of an old Lotus Cortina. Yours came from South Africa, didn't
yes.
it? Yeah. Do you know where yours came from?
I think it's an American. Ours is a left-hand drive car. So I think it came from Holland or somewhere like
okay.
that.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm old enough, to remember when they first came out brand new. And a friend of mine had one, and it did 55 miles an hour in first gear. The very early ones. I remember him telling me that the day after he got it. So, but when what are we talking about doing to these cars? I mean, take us through, both of you, the kind of process from this rusty wreck turning up.
Well, we didn't start with a shell and build it up. Ours was a racing car, which had FIA papers. The owner had run it with John Young in a few Masters events, and the car was reasonably successful. And then he asked me if I would drive it here, and I agreed to, on the condition that he sort of put his hand in the pocket, and if I said the engine was no good, he'd put another engine in, and you know, anything that I wanted to do with dampers, suspension, etc. We did, and that's basically for the last, I would say, 6 months. We've probably been out six times with it. We actually got it wrong, and we needed two tests to get it back where we'd gone wrong, if that makes sense. We did make it slower than it was. So there's a lot of there's a lot of enjoyment in building them and making them go quicker. And I think earlier you said, well, what is it? Why are they going quicker now than they were, you know, back in their era 40, 50 years ago? And it's also materials. Apart from the machinings and the machining, it's the materials today that you can use in the engine, and even dampers of today. The dampers are a damn sight better than that. You're meant to be running oil dampers, not gas, but even the oil dampers are far more sophisticated today than they were 40, 50 years ago.
When Alan Hyde talks to you in the pit lane at British Touring Cars, and here he is again. I'm sure you're delighted to see him.
So happy when I heard that.
I bet you are, yeah. And you guys,
I'm there at the good times as well as the bad.
Sure,
Rob. I'm
sure.
Always there.
But we know actually that interviewing racing drivers in contemporary motor racing at a race meeting, when there's a lot of pressure, there's not much time, we're not going to get great lots of lovely chit chat. We're not always going to get the truth. Well, maybe with you we are, I don't know.
Depends on the question.
Right, okay. I can do some stinkers for you if you want. But here, though, you've got the freedom to tell me what you've been doing to your Cortina, and it's okay in front of him because it's a bit late for him to do it.
Yeah, it's too late.
This is a really bad time to be doing this question, Rob, because when Steve just said, we've engineered the car slower, Andrew had a knowing look in his eye, because that was exactly what they did with his car between last weekend in the BTCC. He had a great car on Saturday, and all of a sudden it wasn't
exactly
a good
feeling.
It was exactly what you did, wasn't it?
Do you want him to? Do you want him to go?
Shall I leave now?
The proviso was we wouldn't mention anything about the last touring car race, so Alan's dismissed.
It was a win in the waiting, wasn't it? Goodness me, what a shame!
What are the key things? I mean. Can we talk a little bit about the tyres? Because I'm guessing that tyres are also a big contribution to going a bit quicker than they would have gone in period.
Yeah, the tyres, but they're still cross-ply, so they're still very low grip tyres. So, you know, I know some people put all these modern dampers, as Steve said, you're meant to have oil-filled dampers. I'm sure there's some people out there that have run gas ones. Yeah, they'll make it a bit better over the curbs, but you're still limited in whatever car you're in. You've still got four contact patches with the tyre. Yeah. So that's the most important thing, is that was the first thing I learnt, really, is read your tyres, look at your tyres, your tyre pressures, tyre temperatures.
Let's not get into tyre pressures.
Oh no, I won't go too technical. I'll confuse myself.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But you're still limited by that. So it's not like a modern GT car or a modern touring car where there's loads of grip. You've still got a very low grip tyre. So yes, the suspension's very poor, and I'm not saying it's not. but you're still limited by it. That's why they're so good to watch and so good to drive, because the tyre is such low grip, it's drifting all over the place. So you're limited by that, but you know, if they put these cars on more modern tyres, a radial tyre that didn't drift anywhere near as much, they'd one be nowhere near as good fun to watch, and they'd be nowhere near as good fun to drive. So, but it's we all want to go quicker with the cars. We all want to be competitive. So we've done as much testing as we can. We've done a couple of days here, just trying to improve the setup, trying to improve the damping and stuff like that. But it's all within the homologation, so there's only so much you can really do for driver preference and different circuits.
Are you going to answer my question?
Sorry, what was the question?
What are the special things that Team Jordan has been doing to this Cortina?
There's genuinely, Steve could come and have a look around the car. There's genuinely nothing that special. It's all off the shelf stuff that we've brought from you know, the dampers are Kony. They're just standard Cortina damper, race Cortina dampers that we've brought from them. There's no trick bits yet. If it was the A40, there'd be a lot of trick bits on it, so I'd be saying Steve couldn't come and look around that. So this time next year, that offer won't apply. But we're not, as I said, we're quite, the Cortina is very new, so we haven't got where we really want with getting lots of little secrets and lots of little secret tweaks here and there. We're not at that stage with this, so it is all pretty much off the shelf stuff that we've just tried to make the best we can with. And that's the truth. That's not a question. That's not an answer I'm lying on.
Accepted.
It's interesting. Obviously, you're driving a great variety of cars. The Lotus Cortina that you've got this weekend, hugely different to the MG that you're driving in the BTCC. But you came into touring car racing in an unusual route. It wasn't the usual route for a young man. It was a rallycross background, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a very different route. It wasn't the normal kind of karting route that a lot of people took. It was rally cross, and I actually went into that because I wanted initially to go rallying, and then I experienced the door-to-door racing and loved that and kind of got the racing bug. But that's why I love driving these sort of historic cars, well, because they move around so much. And coming from rallycross, I love driving anything you can drive out of shape. And a modern touring car, you can't really do that because it's slow. So that sounds a bit boring, but you know, it's far more fun to drift a car around and throw it around sideways than it is to drive it neat and tidy.
And of course, both of you, I mean, it's also so much more fun for us, the fans, the spectators. You know, I mean, it's much more fun to watch, dare I say this, then, sorry, Mr. Gale, but you know, it is more fun to watch the modern touring cars, I think. Anyway,
I think that's the appeal to us as well. As Andrew just said, that you know, they are old cars. They have obviously all, they're not MOT failures, they're all up to screw together nicely. But you know, you're getting the maximum out of an old car with a lot of very good drivers in, and they are. If I wasn't racing here, I would want to be watching the race with all these drivers. Some of them I know very well, and some of them I just know their past and their credentials.
We've got, not surprisingly, we've got a lot of questions from our Motorsport magazine readers and listeners. We'll start with you, Steve, and we've got this question comes from somebody you know called Marino Franchitti. You ready for this?
Okay. So glad this is on video.
Yeah, he wants you to tell us, please, the Spa 24 extra passenger story, please.
Okay.
Is that a yes?
Yeah, I'll tell the story. So, 1986, Spa 24 hours, driving for Ford in a factory Eggenberger car. It wasn't the Cosworth, it was the horrible Merco, I think it was called, before we got the Cosworth. And the race was on, I don't know what, it was daylight, I do know that. Came into the pits, did a pit stop, the other driver got out, I got into the car. And as we set off down the, or as I set off, it was we, but as I set off down the pit lane, I suddenly got a tap on my shoulder. And there was a mechanic who got in to change the drink bottle, and we had drink bottles and cool suits. And I luckily hadn't got, you know, I was only a couple of pits down the hill in those days, but I got by about three pits, and suddenly there was a tap on my shoulder, and I had to stop, and he opened the door and got out, and I continued. So it only lost us about 5 seconds, I think. So, so that's the story, yeah.
That's one good story, isn't it?
When it comes off the jacks and they say go, you go.
Thank you, Marino Franchitti, for reminding us of that one.
Didn't know I told Marino that one. Obviously, I had.
You need to be careful what you tell these Franchittis. Dario's been out in your car. Dario Franchitti's been helping him develop his car.
So that's the one secret tweak I didn't tell you about, you see. We've had Dario helping us.
You can rely on me to get the secrets out.
I hope he gave you some tips on his NASCAR setup.
Yeah, it only goes through left-hand corners. Still, hey, never mind. Andrew, a question from Nick Bradley. Which series outside the UK would you like to race in?
Touring car wise, probably the Australian V8s. Yeah. I think that's a fantastic championship. It's very big out there. But I've actually driven one of the cars, and they're a real, real handful. Yeah. And not many European drivers have gone over there and shown hugely well, because they're so different to drive than anything we've got here. And actually, when I went out there, the thing that surprised me is, you know, over here and in Europe, any single seater driver wants to get to Formula One. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, most of the single-seater drivers out in Australia want to get to Australian V8. So the chance of making the break and going over there to try and make a go of that is very slim, because you've got all these quick Australian young drivers that are actually, everything they're doing is just to try and get to Australian V8s. Mm. Other than that, probably World Rallycross. I've done a couple of events over the last couple of years in World Rallycross, and as Alan said earlier, that's where I started. So to see that get world championship status, get IMG behind it as a promoter, that sport's really, really growing. And that's nice to see, because that was the first sport I was involved in motorsport. So that's always got, I've always got a soft spot for rallycross. So, yeah, probably if I had to pick one, it'd be World Rallycross.
Steve, this one comes to you from Paul Fernley, and I'm guessing it's the Paul Fernley who writes for Motorsport Magazine. Good writer is Paul. And he wants to know, how impressed were you by Nigel Mansell's performance in that 1993 Toker shootout?
Which one? The one that Tiffany Dale helped him into the bridge, or the one later? He did a few races.
Yes, he did.
He had the astonishing run through the field in the wet, didn't he?
Yeah, that one. Yeah. Yes, I was impressed, because he didn't impress me up until then. With his other sort of couple of one-off drives, he looked as though he was struggling. Certainly, the one where he had the accident, but that last one he did it look very, very good. He sort of suddenly everything seemed to click with him, and he was able to come from middle of the field up and I think he did win the race.
No, he did not. I think he ended up fifth. Did John win it? I think John won it.
John who?
John who? Good point. I've recently rediscovered the video of that, and I was watching it just very recently. That was an astonishing race for him, actually.
Okay, Andrew, we were talking then, obviously, about the sort of super touring era and everything like that. I mean, was that when you first became aware of the touring cars? Was it a bit later than that? Because you're very young.
It was super touring era was the first sort of that I really got into it. And you know, just looking back at those cars now, that was a fantastic era for the sport, but they were proper bits of kit. The budgets back then, I think, were a bit more than they are now. But actually at Rockingham, there was a support race for the super touring cars, and they just sound proper. You know, they sound to me like a touring car should. But I actually drove one of the Nescafe Renault Lagunas in a bit of a track test at Alton Park, and they're impressive things to drive. And in a way, it would have been nice to race in that era, just because it looks so full on. Lots of manufacturers involved. You know, pretty much the whole grid was top line drivers. So it's a good part of the sport to look back on. Obviously, it's changed a lot now. The Super Touring era was really cool.
Steve, do you look at the British Touring Car Championship now and think, you know what, I wouldn't mind going that? Or you experienced such a great era. I mean, it's a great era at the moment, I think, because it's so competitive. But
I'm probably going to be very controversial now, but I I don't like the sort of regulations, and I don't understand reverse grids, and I don't understand pulling the grid out of a, you know, if you're fastest and you're on pole, you should start from pole position. And why you would reverse a grid, I don't get it. I know it's for the fans and I know it's for good TV, but if you're a racing driver and you get the car right and you put all the effort, you should be able to start on pole position. I think what the cars that Andrew drives are very difficult cars to drive. They're very heavy, they're underpowered and undertired. I think that you need to be very talented to drive them and to be able to win, but I don't think they're nice to drive. I think they're probably quite horrible.
What would you do with the touring car regs? Would you give them more power? And
it needs, yeah, I mean, it's also, if it's a heavy car, it has a heavy accident. If it's a light car, has a light accident. So also to race people, if it's a light, nimble car, you can actually do a lot more racing. The car's more manoeuvrable than a big heavy car that once it's taken its line and something starts happening in front of you, you join in. You know, you can't miss it, you join in. So I would give them more. It's all about cost. I'm not stupid enough to think that someone's written the regulations because they think they're smarter than the next person. It's about the cost of what it used to cost back in the BTC 90s. It got out of control. And it was costing millions and millions of pounds, and there was every manufacturer in there trying to win, to what we've got now is affordable. It's still expensive, but it's more affordable for these guys than it, you know, the bubble burst back in the 90s. It simply burst.
There's a question from Stuart Coggan for you, Andrew, and it's on this subject, because he's saying, do you feel that touring cars is heading back to full manufacturer back teams like in the 90s, and if so, is this the right way for it to go?
No, I don't think it is heading back to how it was back then. As Steve said, you had pretty much every manufacturer that was trying to compete to win in that. I don't think it will probably ever get back to that, which in a way is probably quite a good thing, because then the costs will stay relatively affordable. And as it is at the minute, as an independent, you can still go and win, and you can win the championship as we did in 2013 as a privateer. If it became dominated by works teams, it would scare off a lot of the independent teams, which I think it's important to have.
It's a shame, actually.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, no, I don't think it is. I think if a couple more got involved, I think that would be good for the championship. And also with the regs, with the car regs, how they are, yeah, everyone wants a bigger budget because you can do more testing, but it's not as though you're completely redesigning a car every year, because the regs are fixed. You know, it's underneath every car, it's the same suspension. Yes, you've got different things you can change and different things you can do with dampers, etc., but it's not as though a manufacturer's going to come in and go, right, I'm going to completely design a touring car from scratch. That isn't how you can do it these days. So I think if you had, you know, three or four manufacturers in, I think that would be perfect, because I still think with how the rules are for the cars that an independent team can compete against them.
Steve, just briefly, can we come back to Paul Fernley's question about Mansell? Because I think a lot of people feel that if you're a quick racing driver in any other kind of category, you could jump into what we used to call a saloon car and be quick. But that isn't actually the case, is it? I mean, as you pointed out, that Mansell took time to get it right. It is a particular kind of driving, isn't it?
Yeah, I think touring cars are very, very difficult to drive. Maybe quite simple up to a time on a stopwatch, and then the last couple of seconds, it's a technique. Which a lot of very good, skillful drivers of single-seaters just will never get, just can't get it. I've got colleagues that, you know, every time they got into a touring car, they were just embarrassingly slow. I won't mention any names. And you've got other colleagues that, you know, they'd won Formula 2, you know, done Formula 1 and everything, but they just didn't get it in the touring car. So there is a technique, there's a discipline that makes them work. It's possibly not very easy. I think Nigel thought it was going to be a lot easier than it was, and I think he sort of kept coming back it wasn't all in the same season. I think there was a couple of seasons that he did a few races, and I think it annoyed him that he couldn't get the hang of it, and he actually came back to prove to everybody that he did get a hang of it.
What is that final 2 seconds? When you said there's a knack to it, is it something you can put into words, or is it something that you develop?
Put it in. The cars work in a very small, or you and the car as a driver with a stopwatch, they work in a small envelope, especially a super touring, and you can overdrive it, you can underdrive it. You've got to drive it with grip, and you've got to know all the tricks, and I can't explain to you what the tricks are, no more than probably a NASCAR driver could explain to me how to go quick on a banking where you're wide open all the way around with traffic. But there is a technique. I was always classified as a touring car driver, and even got tarred with, like, you can't drive anything else. So it can work for you, it can work against you. Luckily, at the end of my career, I got to prove some critics wrong and got into sports cars and Le Mans cars and proved that I could drive them. And actually, they were easier to drive than a flipping touring car, because they were a proper racing car that did, it went where you wanted it to go. It stopped, it pointed. A touring car at the end of the day is not a racing car. It's normally a road car that's been modified for a racetrack.
Right, well, first of all, don't worry, everybody. Andrew Jordan is coming back. He's just had to nip out for a moment, but he is coming back, in case you're wondering where Andrew Jordan is. Steve, there's a question here, which comes from Nick G. I don't know who Nick G is, but anyway, Nick, thanks for the question. He wants to ask you about you and JJ at Mercedes. When they swapped Bernd Schneider from car to car to beat you to the GT title.
We were in the McLaren and Schneider was in the Mercedes. It was a little bit frustrating, but we were in with a shout right up until the last race, really. But they did. Schneider just stood in the pits, and I think most of the time they were running two Mercedes, and sometimes they were even running three. So he stood there and got into whichever was the best car placed for the last stint. Which, if you're a manufacturer and you want to win it, that's in the regs. There's nothing to stop you doing that. We didn't do that, and I could, I have two sides to it. We thought we could both win the championship, both of us. Snitzer weren't prepared to do it. The other two drivers in the other car was Peter Cox and Ravaglia with the McLaren. They didn't like our setup, JJ and my setup, and couldn't actually and didn't want to drive our car. So if we'd gone that route, there would have been a lot of compromises. Yeah. And then who would they have picked? Would they have picked JJ to stand at the back, or Ravaglia, or Soper, or Cox? So it was frustrating. Right for the very last race at Laguna Seca, we did. We were then in trouble, and it was going against us. So we did actually stand back, both JJ and I, and we picked a car, and we said, we'll watch and see what happens. Yeah. Both we swapped, we parted in the other words. We didn't share the same car. Yeah. So not one of us stood there and picked the best car, but we both picked another car. And Ravaglia, first time in his life, spun off and put it in the sand. And I've never seen Roberto ever make a mistake like that. Yeah. And the other car failed. So JJ and I didn't finish that race, and they won the championship. Frustrating, but... I've got loads of championships like that where I finished second. So
it's a good question, though, because it was an interesting thing. From an outsider, it was an interesting thing for Mercedes to do, to have a sort of, the top driver just dancing from car. Yeah, okay. Welcome back, Andrew. Final question for you from our listeners and readers. This one's from Chris Phillips, and it's a simple one, really. He just wonders, where do you see your career going in the future? And he asks, will Red Bull see you're wearing the hat? Will Red Bull help you get there?
It's a tough one. I often get asked that. And touring cars is great. You know, BTCC is great for me as a young driver. I've been in it quite a few years, yeah. I'm 26. Yeah. And it's good for driver profile. It's good for sponsors.
Yeah.
So it's a tough one because you can make a living at it. I won the Touring Car Championship when I was 24, which is obviously pretty young. So yeah. It's a tough question to kind of actually answer. Touring car wise, I think the BTCC is where I'd stay because of the reasons I've said. It's yeah. very good sponsors. It's very good for a driver profile in the UK. At some point, I will probably do World Rallycross. I'd like to. I'm saying probably, like I'd get a drive like that. I'd like to do World Rallycross at some point. From the very first time I kind of wanted to be, I wanted to make racing cars my job. You have to go where there's a drive, and I'm not the sort of person that goes, right, that's it, I'm only going there, I'm not going to go and drive that. I will drive absolutely anything. And if that's, if there was a deal that came up in a few years and it was, right, you need to go and move to wherever and drive that car and that's how you'll earn your wages, then I'd go and do it. I'm not sure. Too set in my ways that I'd only do that or that. Sure. I'm very open to ideas. I love driving cars, and if you can make a living from driving race cars, you're very lucky. And I'd go and do that. So I haven't really answered the question, but that's kind
it's
of
okay.
My...
okay, I'm cool with
he's
that.
Good at this, isn't he? Yeah. He's very good at this.
But I love driving cars. I love driving everything. Well, everything or anything. So, realistically, British Touring Cars or World Rallycross are my two options, or my two preferred routes.
Sorry about all the noise, everybody, but obviously there are aeroplanes flying around, Spitfires, Hurricanes, Mustangs. They're building the driver's club next door to us, in case you wonder what all the banging is. So it's all happening here. Revival at Goodwood starts tomorrow. Big race for you, Steve Soper, coming up. Big race, what are your tactics?
Taxi? Well, I want to get qualifying out of the way and see how close or how far off we are, really. It's so there's no real tactics. It's, get it off the line and see what happens. I wouldn't actually mind it if it was wet on Sunday. I don't think it's going to be. We spent a day here testing in the wet, and I think we possibly achieved something that maybe the others haven't. So,
look, Steve's playing it down. He's going to go and put it on pole now, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's
playing it down like this. I wish. So, yeah.
Well, by the time you're listening to this Motorsport Magazine podcast, everybody, of course, we will have had the Goodwood Revival, and we'll all know the result. Tactics, Andrew Jordan, come on now. What's Team Jordan? Soper says he could do with a sprinkle of rain. How about you lot?
I think if it rains a lot, the minis will be the car to be in. So my tactics are drive it as quick as I can, and hopefully that'll be somewhere at the front and have some fun and some good hard racing.
And Alan, where's he going next for his next touring car?
He's going to Silverstone in 2 weeks' time.
Weeks, yep.
So he's got a weekend off next weekend. Have you got a weekend off next weekend?
No, I'm working on doing commentary for World Rallycross. So
you do that as well, don't you?
Yeah, so not a weekend off.
No.
Well, it's sort of a weekend off.
And then Silverstone the week after that, and then 2 weeks after that.
Yeah, and then I do have a weekend off.
And then you have got a weekend off.
Sorry, are you saying that Alan's job is your weekend off?
That's an interesting thought. Slightly confusing thought as well. Very good.
Cheers, Flathead.
And then it's the finale at Brands. But you made the point earlier, Andrew, the second half of the season, it's all bunched up together. It gets all a bit frantic, doesn't it?
It's quite full on. And it is a busy part of the year, and at the kind of the more tense time of the season, it really ramps up. And the last few race weekends have kind of been a weekend on, weekend off, which is a busy time for the team, and it doesn't really help the team's cash flow much. But it's good to kind of really, I don't like it when there's huge breaks between races. It's nice to have a weekend off now and then, obviously, but we want to be racing, we want to be out there as much as possible. So it's nice when you can get into a bit of a rhythm with quick fire weekends.
There's one point that we haven't touched on, because we're talking about Andrew and I driving in this race, but actually it's two races added together, the overall winner.
Yeah.
And obviously Andrew's driving with his dad, and who I can accept is still younger than me, but the gentleman driver,
yes,
despite he did BTC.
Not a bad gentleman driver to have,
not a
Steve,
bad
yeah.
gentleman driver. I'm driving with John Young, who's a very able, qualified driver. But who is the gentleman driver, as in a magazine, out of Matt Neal and Shedden?
That's now, a very interesting question.
You know, the rules have slightly been bent all of a sudden. Not that I'm a bad loser or anything, you know.
And I, or that you have a fine eye for detail.
Know, if you're looking at Andrew and Mike should be very, you know, good pairing, very, very capable drivers and deserve to win. You know, then the rest of the drivers are gentlemen drivers in those cars. They haven't got the classification of Matt Neal. You know, Matt's a very good friend of mine, don't get me wrong. But I think Matt should be starting the race, and he should have a gentleman in for the second race.
Yeah,
leave that lightweight Shedden out of the car.
Between them, they've got four touring car titles between them, haven't they? You make
many,
a really
it?
Fair point.
Well, I tell you what, I can't wait for the qualifying. It's getting pretty tense here already,
should
and it's Thursday afternoon. Okay, thank you very much, both of you, for spending
you.
So much
thank
time
you.
With us. When I know you just want to get back to that car, give it that little extra something. And don't forget, everybody, that on ITV4 in a couple of weeks' time, there will be the programme. I think it's on at 9 o'clock on ITV4 in a couple of weeks' time, which will feature Andrew Jordan with his Lotus Cortina in the Team Jordan workshops, which I must say are very impressive. And Dario Franchitti will be there. He's presenting that programme, so that'll be worth seeing. But Steve Soper, Andrew Jordan, thank you very much. And thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
For your touring car expertise. Helped me out on a couple of occasions. Thank you, Ed, for organising it all. Brilliant. And, of course, we'll see you next time. And our next podcast is with Tom Christensen, who needs no introduction from me. So thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.